What's poppin', people? It's your boy Cass once again for the Say Less podcast. I just want to thank you before I ever get into any show. I want to thank you, the listener, just for giving me an hour of your time, 45 minutes, a half hour, doesn't matter, because Say Less isn't about me. It's about you, the supporter of this show. So thank you so much for listening and subscribing as well. You can go to youtube.com/Kazeem to see this show in its entirety if you want to see us in all its glory. All the video glory, all the streaming glory, go to my YouTube page. That's youtube.com/Kazeem. But shout out to everybody listening on iTunes, Spotify, Google, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Podbay, Podbean, literally anywhere you can get podcasts, you can listen to Say Less with Kaz. And like I do every time we do this show, I promise you a great guest, and today is no different. This episode, obviously, for the first time in a long time, we got some real deal sports to talk about. With the NFL draft going on this weekend, I called up on my boy Willie Colon of Barstool Breakfast to talk all things football, talk all things NFL draft. The Buccaneers, the Giants, and the Jets both went with offensive line help to help shore up some protection for Sam Darnold and Daniel Jones, as well as Saquon Barkley, Le'Veon Bell. So who else to talk to, who better to talk to than a former offensive lineman for the Pittsburgh Steelers, New York Jets, and a Super Bowl champion. But obviously you can catch him on Barstool Breakfast on Sirius XM each and every morning on your ride to work, ride home, or just in the crib, because ain't nobody going anywhere for the foreseeable future. It's a great talk. We talk a whole lot of football, talk about media and the journey that we've taken individually to get where we're going. Our SNY homies, shout out to everybody over there at Sports New York. And yeah, this is a fun talk. So if you enjoy it, hit subscribe, tell a friend to tell a friend. So Emilio Sparks, you know what to do. Every time we do it this time, at this time, hit the fucking music. My man Willie Colon, how you doing, brother?
Hey, what's up, brother?
Man, I'm living. I'm alive. I see the Hofstra in the background. I see the Cardinal Hayes over for the BX. I see you.
Sir. Homegrown. Stay loyal to your soil.
Yes, sir. All day, every day, man. First, before we get into anything, everybody's good at home. How's family? Everything's safe?
Yeah, man, we pushing through it. You know, I think everybody has somebody or knows somebody either close to them or arm's length away that has been affected by this thing, man. So I think, you know, it's undocumented times. It's strange. It's weird. You know, I was just sitting down at the table with my wife, and you know, there's a lot of speculation about New York reopening. I know I think it was de Blasio came out and said maybe May 15th you're going to pop this thing open. Mm-hmm. And I told her, I was like, listen, babe, I'm going to be honest with you. You know, you say I'm a procrastinator, but my procrastination game may step up a little bit more. I may be late to everything.
Yo, let me tell you. I'm like, yeah. I heard them talking to May 15th stuff. I'm like, yo, y'all can start on May 15th. I'll trickle in around June. You know what I mean? Right. I'll let you see how this thing goes before I jump on it, because I still don't trust nothing. But
yeah, I may go in a cave and just come out with a whole new body next fall. And just,
I'm about to go to Dr. Miami. That's the first place I'm going, because all I've been doing is eating and just doing prison workouts. So I'm just all chest right now.
Yeah, man. I'm not. I don't know if I'm built for that corona. That lockdown, man, it's a lot. My thoughts and prayers to everybody that really going through it, though.
Oh yeah, me too, man. Absolutely, but it's good to hear from you. We haven't talked in a minute since like.
Yeah, later. Man. Congratulations on everything. I see you out there with my own stomping grounds, asking why with JSB and the whole gang and the thread. And shout out to Kirk Gowdy. Kirk Gowdy showed me a lot of love when I got off the field.
Yeah, man. And we're nominated for a sports Emmy, so we'll know tomorrow if we won it. So.
That's fire, man. I didn't win shit when I was there, but that's cool.
Well, I appreciate that, as always. They always talk you up over there. They still got your cutout in the storage room. So.
Yeah, man. They put up me, man. They showed me a lot of love. They allowed my maturation to come up.
Yes, sir. Now you're killing it over Barstool Breakfast. I was a guest on the show a couple of times, but obviously for people who may not know the entire story of how your broadcasting career led you to Barstool Breakfast and just the whole Barstool family, why don't you just fill us in on that?
Excuse me. Yeah, it's strange, man, because I – so what happened was I was – just to, because it's just a long story, so I try to compact it. When I got off the field, I didn't really have – I was kind of on the fence, right? You know, you leave the game. I left football very bitter because I didn't want to – I had this heart and a passion to still play. My knees were just gone. And as every athlete, you know, your mind and heart may be still in one place, but your body may be in another. And that was pretty much my situation. So I was doing a lot of media stuff while I was playing, especially my last 2 years with the Jets. And when I knew it was about time for me to retire, my wife was really the one that was like, hey, man, you know, you can do this. Give it a shot. You know, just get into it, you know, learn. You're not going to be great at first, but the more you stay at it, you'll be fine. And I said, okay. And I was really, you know, still kind of grieving about what, you know, I had been playing football since I was 14 years old. Some people play, you know, have been playing football since Pop Warner. I'm, you know, we New York City guys, there was a lot of Pop Warner teams. So right. I had to maximize my opportunity once I started football. So I was really all in on football. It was my everything. So when it came back to the broadcast stuff, man, I was really fortunate to have people like Jonah Schwartz, to have like Janae, who was in the locker room, who was really kind of just really uplifting and sweet. Ray Lucas.
She's awesome.
Ray Lucas was really like my brother because he had played. He had made the transition on and on. So it was a bunch of people at SNY who was really, really good, man, and really treated me with so much respect and so much love. And then I was doing SNY, and I was doing ESPN, and I was kind of doing Hahn and Humpty with Chris Canty and Rick DiPietro and Alan Hahn and Dave Rothenberg, and I was doing working what he needed work. So I was kind of stirring the pot on the New York scene and pretty much, you know, whoring myself out anywhere that who was willing. You know how it is. Anybody that's willing.
I know how I'm doing the same, bro. I'm like, want me to come here and talk? What? Yes, let's do it.
You want to talk to me, I'll talk to you back. So I was doing that for a little bit, and I liked it. And then I started doing things with ESPN. And so I had went out to every Super Bowl prior to – so I retired in 16. I would go out to Super Bowl and do Media Row. And I was auditioning with Fox, and I had a couple of auditions. And things were okay. Things were working out for the most part. Well, Jason Whitlock, who everybody knows, they were trying to give Whitlock his own show before Speak for Itself. And okay. At the time, it was me and JSB actually auditioning for the show. And so we were out in San Francisco. This is when the Super Bowl was out in San Francisco. And we're shooting a pilot for the show at Super Bowl week. The show never really turned. It never really became anything. But me and JSB kind of stayed in touch. I went back to doing the SNY and ESPN stuff, and then I get a call one day. JSB had landed in New York working at Barstool, and I didn't know anything about Barstool. I wasn't familiar with it at all. And she was like, "Hey, man, Willie, I don't know if you know about Barstool, however, but it's this new internet company. It's really, really good. So it's going to be big. It's going to be huge. Yada, 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 yada." And she was like, "You know, I think you should give it a try," which was good because it just tells you how God worked. Prior to that conversation with her, I was working out with Ryan Russillo because Ryan Russillo had just lost Danny Cannell. Danny Cannell had took off, and I think he went to do some stuff on CBS.
Right.
So it was just the Ryan Russillo show, and they were plugging me in with him, and I was doing the mic and mic, so I was popping up on and off with Ryan Russillo. And I thought I was actually going to be Ryan Russillo's secondhand guy, his new guy. That didn't fall through, so I was really bitter about that because I really thought I did a good job, and me and Ryan had really hit it off. Even he looked at me, he's like, "Man, I thought they were just throwing you at me just for a tryout, but I really like you." The powers to be, whatever happened, it never worked out. So I had to push forward. So I went back to ESPN locally on 98.7. And so then all of a sudden I got the call from JSB about Barstool Breakfast and how this morning show, she was putting together this morning show. And it was me, her, and a comedian by Young Francis, who I know you're very familiar with.
Francis Ellis, my guy.
Yeah, so we started doing – I went in there, auditioned. Francis was, you know, was cool. Me and Francis kind of hit it off because we both kind of had that bro, you know, happy-go-lucky, athletic, you know, macho thing going on. And JSB was kind of the chick in the room. But she was, you know, JSB's funny. She's quirky. She's silly. So we all kind of gelled. And then once, you know, the powers to be at Barstool was like, "Hey, man, let's get up and run." And we just went with it. And I was able to crack the audition and get the job. And it's weird how I think I've been doing this for 3 years now. you know, KSB is at SNY with you, you know?
Yeah.
He's no longer with Barstool, and Francis is no longer with Barstool. You know, he's tearing up the
comedy. Pro Bible, I think, right?
Yeah. So it's, you know, both guys, both, you know, prominent figures who I started with are both gone, and it left me kind of on top of the hill holding a flag. And I'm blessed, man, because I got large. And one of our newcomers on the show, Brandon Newman, was actually on the production side of things when me and JSB met out in Fox when I was auditioning with Whitlock show. So just I brought him over. And so now we have this great show on Sirius XM China 85, Barstool Breakfast. It's wacky. It's kind of a variety show. A lot of people, it's sternish. We get all over the place. We talk about everything we want to talk about. And people seem to love it. And we just continue to put out content that people love.
Yeah, and I think the reason why people like it, or the reason why I like it so much, is because, like, when you get a lot of we always swear that we want our athletes to just kind of have no filter and let us in and just, like, speak how you want to speak. You know, you don't want to hear the happy-go-lucky athlete answer that we seem to always get. And you always, always kind of, like, keep it super-duper funky every single time you're on that show. So from the last day of playing to – that first day at Barstool Sports, Barstool Breakfast. How long was that entire process? Because I feel like you named like 11 stops in between. Like, how did that?
Yeah, it was a lot, man. Like, it was, you know. So I went from doing Jets stuff. Obviously, I was doing the Thursday night Jets thing, and I was doing Sundays, and I was doing Tuesdays with Jonas. We had a Jets podcast, and then I was in between before there was the thread. It was Daily News Live. So I went from doing that once a week to damn near twice a week, to three times a week. On top of that, doing ESPN. On top of that, you know, God knows what else. And then I started kind of working my way up the ESPN chain. And I was actually flying to L.A. and doing Nacion. So I would go to Nacion, shoot that, and then get on a red eye and fly back and get ready for SNY and all this other stuff. So I was doing a lot. And in that process, man, just to give you a little emotional insight, you're still doing all this in hopes that something's going to be worth your while. And when you get the opportunities and you feel like, man, this is worth my while, I still hated it a little bit. You know what I mean? Because it wasn't football. It wasn't something I was accustomed to doing. And in this business, as you know, Kaz, man, when you're an athlete, your name is only worth gold for 2 years. 2 years max, right? Outside of that, it's all right. What are you really bringing to the table? What are you really doing? Can we really use you? Can we use you for other things? They're trying to figure out what they want to do with you. And for me, because even though I had the Super Bowl title, I was on a historic team. I was a sports figure that was willing to talk. They still want you to cut onions. They still want you to kind of get behind the curtain and kind of dime people out and say certain things and kind of pull it out of you because they're looking for the headlines. They're looking for Willie Colon said XYZ or this, da, 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 da. And I found that to be weird because, I don't have no problem saying whatever comes out of my mouth. And sometimes it's good, sometimes bad, sometimes it's I misspeak and I have to go back and say, man, my bad, XYZ. But it felt forced. You know, it's one thing somebody tell me, like, hey, we prefer if you tell us about the days with you and Big Ben. Like, well, that's between me and Big Ben. If you want to talk about what happened on the field or some other nonsense, then fine, we can do that. So you have to find your happy balance. And I learned that through my process of kind of popping around of what producers want and what producers like, what kind of contact. And then, you know, I was doing the NFL – in the NFL Network boot camps, and I was meeting a lot of big people in the industry, and they see a lot of positive feedback. And everybody's like, man, you know, one thing you have, I remember Stephen A. said this to me one time. I was in a building at ESPN on West 66. He was just like, man, you just remember you have one thing that nobody else has. You actually played the game and you was in the locker room. And for me, that was good. But on top of that, what does that necessarily mean? You know, because you got to understand, like, yeah, I was in the locker room, but I still have to be entertained. I still have to be educational. I still have to be able to entertain. Right. And I also have to somehow respect the code of my brotherhood that I signed up for with the rest of these ball players. So you're trying to figure out all these things, and you're trying to figure out yourself, and you're trying to be this guy. You know, I was looking at so many people. I was like, man, I like his style here. I like his delivery. I like the way he do this. And then you kind of, like anything, you go through the process, man, and you chisel at it, and you start to mold yourself. And there's days where I'm happy. I'm extremely thrilled about where I'm at. And then there's other times where I'm like, man, you know, I got to be better at this. I got to, you know, just work on the details about who I am, my delivery, and just keep pushing. So when you get into this field of media, there's no such thing as just showing up and having a day. You know, you kind of got to psychologically, you got to push yourself, because one
thing always got to be on. That's the one thing that I learned a lot. Like, there's certain days, like, you know, doing a podcast and doing TV is like different. Like, sure. If you're having a bad day on a podcast, you can just kind of like talk it out and eventually like work it out. But when you're doing TV and media like you're doing, you got to be – nobody cares if you're having a bad day. If you're on camera,
yeah,
they need you to be on. And that's a – it's easy to say it, but like to live through it, it's very, very different.
Yeah, I realized for me it was – one, I realized so I had the opportunity I'm still with Barstool. We went out to Super Bowl. We had the opportunity to interview Dan Patrick, and Dan Patrick was on the stage. Mm-hmm. And one of the questions that came from Big Cat, one of the characters here at Barstool, he asked Dan. He goes, "Dan, why? How come you didn't do the Olympics? You were shoo-in for it. Da 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 da." And Dan was like, "Well, simply, I didn't enjoy watching me." You know, I didn't enjoy looking at me on the screen. I couldn't do it as well as Bob Costas does.
Right.
That hit home. And because anything I watch, yeah, there's the things you want to get better from a mechanical standpoint, from the mental standpoint. But then do you enjoy watching yourself talk? Do you enjoy just looking at you? Like, and sometimes you have to, as people who choose to be in front of a microphone and talk and have this content entertained, do you really just enjoy what you're putting out there? Like, if so, for me, I had to sit back and say, you know, every time on radio, do I want to listen to me, or am I just putting in the work? And that's tough, you know, because valid, these are the things that pay your bills. But also you want to be able to sit back and say, man, I had a funny joke. Let me hear this. So I'm always on the fringe of like, man, just make sure I enjoy me. You know what I mean? Yeah. Let me enjoy me on the mic, because the day I cannot, I don't want to hear myself talk, or it's because those are going to be things you just like, I don't, you know, I sound like shit or this, whatever, but you still want to enjoy it. Like, I try to go back and hear, and there's a lot to me. There's times where I don't enjoy myself. Right. And there's times where I'm like, man, that was funny. Good job, Willie. So you got to constantly boost yourself up, but also be critical of yourself. But don't come to the point where everything you do and you feel like, man, that was yesterday. Yesterday's behind me. Sometimes you got to go back and watch your progress. And
that's a hard thing to do. That was something I didn't do for a while. Like, I used to hate looking at my old work, because I always thought, well, I'm evolving and that. You gotta like watch yourself and critique yourself. Like, if LeBron and Jordan can watch game tape of themselves and they're the best of what they do, you gotta be able to go back and be like, okay, like, this was a good joke, this was funny, this was a good delivery. Like, you gotta be able to nitpick at yourself and still enjoy the content that you put out. Because if you don't enjoy it, how's anybody else gonna enjoy it?
Yes, sir.
Absolutely. So, goddamn, let's talk some football. We actually had a draft last night, and it was the first time ever that it was completely digital because of everything going on in the world. And for what it was worth, it was amazing television. Outside of like the football ramifications and everything going on in the NFL and what it's going to lead to, like, just fantastic TV. So first question I want to ask you, just off the rip, being an old lineman, being from New York, being from the Bronx, Giants and the Jets both went with O-line help. They both got young quarterbacks. They both got stud running backs that need people to push motherfuckers around, right? So between the Giants and Thomas and Becton with the Jets, who do you think made out the best out of those two?
You know, for me, I watched Thomas play. I watched Georgia football this year because I was watching a lot of SEC football, period. So two things. I watched the kid Thomas play. I like him. I really do. I think he reminds me a lot of Kareem McKenzie, the old right tackle the Giants used to have, the days of David Deal and Snead. He reminds me, his makeup and how he moves reminds me a lot of it. Okay. And he seems like a guy who, from that can move well enough, and he just has to be more consistent. But he seems like he has a little bit of dog in him, so I appreciate that. I honestly think I love the pickup by the Jets and Becton. I had the opportunity. So I have a football podcast called the Going Deep Podcast with me and another guy by the name of Stephen Che, and we were at the Senior Bowl, and I actually saw Becton. And you can't teach 6'7", 300. They said 364 pounds. That man is all of 370, 380. I mean, he's a monster of a man. He made everybody else on that field look like little kids. And he plays hard. He plays hard. You tell he cares. He still has these little quirks about him that he's going to have to fix, but he's a young guy. I like the fact – I'm a big fan of – when you read an offensive lineman's background, he was a basketball player. He was a good basketball player. And then he went over to football, and they said he walked into the building 300, damn near 400 pounds, couldn't get through warmups, worked his tail off, and got down to 350, 360. That's a guy who cares and who wants to be better. Because some guys, when you're that big, and it's hard, man. It's hard losing weight. It's hard to kind of – you know, especially when you're not confident in your role. He cared and he got it done. And I'm happy with him, because one thing the Jets do, they have done previously, was let the offensive line be the staple of their core, kind of be the core of their organization. You talk about the days of the Brickenshaw Ferguson and Nick Mangold. You go back to the days of Kevin Y, J.C. Farini, and Jumbo Elliott. I mean, you go back, there's a lineage of really, really good offensive linemen.
And yourself. You wasn't so bad.
Thank you. But Joe Douglas being there, realizing if we're going to maximize the potential Sam Darnold has, we got to give him protection. And I thought signing the left guard Alex Lewis, getting the young kid, now they're going to figure out what's going to happen with Brian Winters and figure out what's going to happen on that right side. But for most part, they addressed a big need. And I like what the Jets did. I think they get the win. But that's not a knock on the kid Thomas. I think he's a really solid ball player and will be. But I'm just really impressed with the Jets, because when you lose a guy like Robbie Anderson and you have CeeDee Lamb, Jerry Jeudy, Ruggs. Oh, I think Ruggs was maybe gone by then.
I think Ruggs was the first wide gone.
The Raiders, right.
Yeah.
But you talk about the caliber receivers that are sitting there for the picking. And you don't get greedy and you say, you know what, we have a need and we attack the need and we're able to get that. Because honestly, Becton could have went – if the Chargers don't grab Herbert, I mean, if I'm the Chargers who had the 29th ranked offensive line last year, I'm going to get Becton, bro. Like, it's not even – I got Mike Pouncey as my center. I got Becton, a young
talent. Tyrod Taylor ain't no scrub. It's not like, you know, he'll keep you above water.
At all. And you got Keenan Allen and you got all these guys. You got a young defense. Like, the Chargers really I was surprised by the Chargers pick by getting Herbert. Because Herbert, I like you. You can't – he comes from an athletic pedigree, 6'6", super smart. But one thing about Herbert that really – because I watched a couple of Oregon games this season, does he have the arm talent? Sure. But he holds on to the ball.
Right.
And if you're a 6'6 guy who lumbers – and he can move – but if you're a 6'6 guy who doesn't have a quick release, you tend to, especially with this new age defense, the guys are bigger, faster, stronger, you're gonna get yourself in a lot of trouble. So I felt like they should have addressed the offensive line. They should have grabbed a guy like Becton or even the kid Tristan Wirfs out of Iowa.
Tampa. We'll get into that in a little bit,
too. Yeah, he ended up going to Tampa. But so I thought Chargers should have went offensive line just to kind of seal that leaking hole. But they went, got Herbert, so you can't, it is what it is. But
the Chargers surprised me, because it feels like there's a lot of, like I said, Tyrod Taylor is somebody who could keep you above water. But you got Jameis Winston out there, you got Cam Newton out there, you got like some solid quarterbacks that, you know, if you put those weapons around you and the offensive line is good and that defense is young, like Cam Newton's good enough to win a division. Like Jameis Winston, for all people say about him, like he's got actual NFL talent. You know what I mean? Like he can put points up. But, you know, it really did surprise me that they went Herbert so early and not necessarily went into that free agent pool. So let me get your thoughts on just
the third offensive lineman that went in that first 15 picks, Tristan Wirfs, who's going to be backing up or protecting Tom Brady and, you know, standing next to Rob Gronkowski and an already pretty good offensive line. What do you think of what the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have done so far just in this past week alone, getting Gronk back, getting another pick, and getting Tristan Wirfs?
Well, I think this what happened with the Brady and the whole situation with Gronk. You know, let's start. 2019, everybody could say Brady's going to retire. He's going to remain a Patriot. He's going to retire a Patriot. Nobody could ever – you would have to be the luck – you have to be Buddha himself to say that you knew Tom Brady was going to land with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, right? Like, yeah. This is a team that went 7-9 and finished third in the division. Like, for real. You know what I mean? So, it's not like you can sit back and say, oh, yeah, Tom is definitely going to that. So, it shocked everybody. Mm-hmm. Him landing in Tampa – makes sense because when Jason Light, the GM for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, was a part of that team that was a part of that organization that drafted Tom. So there's a relationship there. Bruce Arians, my offensive coordinator, he was my offensive coordinator when I was at Pittsburgh and that I won a Super Bowl with. You know, one thing that BA does really, really well, he doesn't get in your way.
Right.
He's not going to make it – he's going to make it simple, he's going to make it efficient, and he's going to make it work. If it works – he's not going to stop it from working. He's not going to say, "Well, let's just add this." Just because, like, he's going to run it down to the ground. One thing I know what's going to happen down in Tampa is Tom is going to bring some of what pretty much everything he knows or from the Belichick tree. He's going to bring that knowledge and he's going to bring it to Tampa, be able to hone it in, make it a part of the system. Gronk and Godwin and I know OJ Howard, he may be leaving because now Gronk is there, but that defense, that organization. They're building a culture that what we had in Pittsburgh, and that only thing that matters is Sunday. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what happens or who's in the locker room. Everybody has to do their part. You got to win on Sunday, and Tom Brady is going to show a lot of these young guys what it means to win on a consistent basis. Because you can win in the NFL, but can you win consistently? And then when you have guys like Gronk, and you have guys like Tom Brady. And plus, you have already the caliber of young guys on that defense who's already ready to lead that team. That's going to come along, and that's going to come along in a fashion where I try to tell a lot of people it's hard to win in the NFL, man. It's not. It just the Patriots made it look easy because they brought in.
Yeah,
Tom is going to have to get these guys to buy in what it means to play every Sunday, be efficient, be accountable, and I think them going to Tampa together. It's just signs that, listen, man, Tom's not done. 42, him being 42 means nothing. He wants to do it. He wants to go out on his own, out on his sword, so to speak.
Yeah, and that's the one thing. It feels like there was so many years that he could have just kind of like walked away and had the storybook ending. But like he kind of reminds me of Favre, where it's like he's not going to leave that field until he's dragged off that field. Like,
right. I mean, you know? Mike had that, right? Mike left. Michael Jordan left and came back. And left a wizard, which I still erased from my head.
They did like those like, you know, 20 years ago, Michael. I'm like, that didn't happen. I was like,
yeah, I don't even
alter the universe.
Yeah.
Simulated 2K too long and ended up on a wrong team. That didn't really happen.
It's like when I see Rucker Park clippings of like KD and everybody playing their part. I'm like, oh, that happened at some point in time. I just don't acknowledge when it happened.
Should have been a Dykeman, is what he's saying.
Exactly.
You know, another big trade – not trade, another big draft pick from last night was Jordan Hall going to the Green Bay Packers, a guy from Utah Jordan State. Jordan Love, I'm sorry. I think a lot of R. Kelly or something, Aaron Hall. But Jordan Love, Utah State, very talented quarterback. But just earlier that week, Aaron Rodgers was on Pat McAfee's show talking about, you know what? It would be nice to get a skill position. 15 years here. I've never gotten a guy in the first round from wide receiver, tight end, running back, none of that. And they do get a skill position, but they ended up taking who's probably going to be Aaron Rodgers' eventual replacement in Green Bay. How should Aaron Rodgers feel about this right now?
Well, I think, listen, we got a lot of people say, well, Aaron did it to Brett Favre, two different situations, right? Mm-hmm. When Aaron Rodgers was technically the first pick in his draft, he just happened to fall to Green Bay. And Green Bay was like, yeah. And yeah. That's like, you know, like, of course, we'll take him. And they took him. And it worked out. in their favor. I think in this situation, Aaron having played on such an elite level for so long and continues to play at elite level, you know, if you go back to last year, there were some games, man, where he just didn't have the talent around him, and he just didn't have – you tell that the team wasn't – there was some chemistry issues over there. Yeah, there were some things
going on. You can tell he still had it, but, like, there was just some times where it's like, this don't look like an Aaron Rodgers offense for some reason.
Right, and then it doesn't help when you're going against – a Super Bowl caliber defense in the San Francisco 49ers. Just so you were seeing his exposure, you were seeing the team kind of not look like the Green Bay Packers. And so if you fast forward to where we're at now, Jordan Love being picked, if I'm Aaron, I'm like, does this mean I'm on the clock that I'm gone in 2 years because this guy's going to be coming in? Because everybody's looking at Jordan Love like, all right, this kid's not starting right away. He needs at least 2 or 3 years to get ready and be the guy. But also, if you're Aaron Rodgers, it's like, well, are we tanking? Because right now you got me a backup quarterback. I need a receiver. I need an offensive line. I need something. So I think Aaron Rodgers, and considering that the GM came out and said he hasn't had conversations with Aaron prior to the draft or before this draft started, this is how mixed signals, mixed messages happen. Because if you're the GM of the Green Bay Packers, you would hope a guy who's put the whole franchise on his back after letting Brett Favre walk out the door, you would hope you say, listen, man, we're going to get Jordan Love because in 3 years, you know, I don't know if you're going to be here. I don't know if we can continue on with you because of age and money, XYZ. We got to have another guy in place. We're going to do it. Don't freak out. We're just trying to get ready for the future. Mm. Those conversations need to happen, and I don't know if they did happen.
The fact that those conversations didn't happen doesn't lend to believe that, okay, they're not on the same page. Maybe he's out of there because, I mean, Jordan Love, as good as he is, he might have been available in the next couple of rounds. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't think he's a first-round quarterback. And if you do go first round when you already have a guy like Aaron Rodgers and you're not telling him, hey, we're grabbing a quarterback in the first round, that seems like the writing's kind of on the wall, no?
It was crazy. If I would just do it the Packer way, right? Like, and I don't know. And obviously, I'm saying this ignorant to the draft order. You know, if I'm Green Bay, I'm gonna get me a receiver or some type of offensive weapon. And I don't understand what's Pat like. There's this notion that Jalen Hurts can't play football.
Right.
Jalen Hurts is maybe not the most efficient passer in this draft, but he's a winner. He wins games. He won in Alabama, and he won in Oklahoma. Why wouldn't you want a guy to say, you know what, we're going to go get Jalen Hurts, Aaron. Don't worry about it. No matter, because if he plays quarterback or if you put him in a slot, we have a weapon. Green Bay needed a weapon. I think Jalen Hurts is a weapon. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't given that nod, which is shocking. And then you put the kid Love. Obviously, he has a big arm talent. He has a big upside. But – you know, it is what it is. I think Aaron has all the right to be upset, but I don't think he is. I think he goes the business, and I think he just pushes forward. And whenever they give him his walking papers, he'll probably end up going to, shit, who knows, somebody in the division to slaughter the Green Bay twice a year. Who knows?
Right, you know, like this always happens. The top two quarterbacks obviously taken in the draft. Joe Burrow, we all knew that was going to be a number one pick, but I don't want to say somewhat surprising, but, you know, Tua Tagovailoa, the Miami Dolphins have been tanking for him for a while. They won a couple of games, didn't think they'd be in position to get him. Tua gets injured. It still kind of works out. A lot of people talking about Tua redshirting 1 year, getting healthy. Do you think that's a good idea? Or if he's as healthy as everybody says he is and he can go and he can play, do you play him?
No, I think because, listen, I like Tua for the Dolphins. I thought it was a smart move in their part. They had to take a shot. They didn't really have anything on that team to kind of say, all right, this we're gonna put the future on him. Like, you got to credit, you know, they paid Christian McCaffrey in Carolina $64 million because he's a total package, 1,000-yard running back, 1,000-yard receiving running back, great guy off the field, figurehead. you know, you got to figure Carolina is losing Luke Kuechly. They lose Cam. There's a transition period. You need somebody, a rock solid piece in that locker room to push you through that transition period to the cavalry comes. Well, that's what Miami's doing. They're getting Tua together. They had the head coach. When they're going to go through a transition period where they're going to have to put it on somebody. This is a young guy who, by all accounts, if you're going to pick a quarterback who is a preacher's son, God driven, focused, hardworking, and battles through injuries, and you want him to play for the Miami Dolphins, then you got Tua. You get what I'm saying? Like, right. This kid doesn't have a lot of off the field demons. He's not into the bullshit. He's just football, God, and family. That's who he is. And you need somebody that's from an organizational standpoint to put that on their shoulders in a year two or three, and you have that with Tua. So I thought it was safe. I love it. I would sit him. I wouldn't play him next year. I think he needs time to heal. And that's not – I think he fought himself back to put himself on tape, watching himself be mobile so the world can see him be mobile. But for me, sit him a year. Let him get healthy. You got Josh Rosen. You got Ryan Fitzpatrick. If you got to gut it out one more year – at least you know you got more picks on the way this year and next year. And then you say, you know what, Tua, showtime. Let's get rolling.
Now, with Tua is one thing, but Joe Burrow is probably going to be the week one starter for the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah.
What do you think the Bengals and the NFL should expect out of him, especially after having one of the – probably the greatest single college football season from a quarterback I've ever seen?
Yeah, I like Joe Burrows, man. I just – What bothers me with Joe Burrow is that somebody – and I said – at one point I said this about Geno Smith, which is crazy. They pretty much handed Joe Burrow the keys to the goddamn Ferrari.
Right.
And they said, don't crash it. And he drove that shit all the way to a national championship. He came out and he didn't scratch it. He didn't total it. And it came back polished, sweet, and ready. And that's what Joe Burrow did, man. Like, he didn't – it's one thing if he didn't have Justin Jefferson, or if he didn't have the offensive line and the running back or that defense. I mean, he had a pretty stacked team. So, Valley, he had to do his part, and he did, and he did it very well. He's going into the AFC North, which prides themselves on what? Defense.
Defense. Yep.
It's going to be cold. He's from Ohio. He didn't make it. He had to transfer out of Ohio State. And he was supposed to go to Nebraska. Nebraska, Scott Frost said, nah, we're good. He goes down to LSU, and he balls out of his mind. I think Joe Burrow is going to be a damn good quarterback. I'm just worried about if Cincinnati has enough patience and are willing to stick it out with him.
I mean, they stuck it out with Marvin Lewis for damn near a decade too long. They should give him some time.
Yeah, but I'm talking about from a quarterback standpoint, because this team needs guidance. This team needs leadership. Nobody knows, even though they got Tyler Eifert and A.J. Green, they need more. And they got Joe Mixon, and I like Joe Mixon. They need more. And it starts with the quarterback, and hopefully he can be that guy. But the AFC North is tough, man. You talk about Baltimore. Baltimore's going to be nasty again. You talk about the Steelers. Big Ben, when Big Ben gets back, it's going to be nasty. The Browns, it will be better next year. Can he handle what's in store for him? And hopefully they don't break him, because I've seen quarterbacks who are broken. Their confidence is broken. Injuries take place. The city turns on them. It's mentally, can he handle it is what I'm really trying to find. I'm not worried about the physical attributes, but from the neck up, can he handle all the pressure? And he showed he can do it in college, but I just think the NFL is another level, and we all got to wait and see.
Yeah, I feel like with him, he kind of comes in with this edge of cockiness/confidence where that's really easy to pull off in college when, you know, like you said, the LSU team was loaded with first-round talent across the board for this year and next year. Yep. And then you got, you know, you're going into a division that has, you know, the number one regular season record in Baltimore. Say what you want about the Cleveland Browns. They're going to have all the talent in the world. Just kind of got to put it together. And the Pittsburgh Steelers are the Pittsburgh Steelers. Like, they're always they're going to sit their way through seven wins every year. You know what I'm saying? And now Big Ben's coming back. Right. With Burrow, I feel like it's going to be something where, you know, we've seen it with a lot of these first-round quarterbacks. We've seen it with, you know, with Baker Mayfield, where he kind of comes in, looks good the first year, second year, not so much. We've seen it with Johnny Manziel, which, you know, comes in – Granted, he's not as big, didn't have as much arm talent, didn't have all that stuff, but came in, and once the confidence was knocked, he was done.
Right.
I'm worried, not worried, but I'm more interested in seeing how Burrow's going to react to losing. How he's going to react to just being not being the favorite going in every game, because it's been a year, maybe longer than that. I think he hasn't lost a game. Yeah. I lost the starting game since like high school, and then going on that sort of a run in college and winning the Heisman and winning the national championship and going number one overall, that first taste of defeat and taking a lot of that, like that might weigh on you for a while.
Yeah, he's answered the bell a lot, especially during his last year, his senior year, because he beat a lot at the top. He beat the top five in college. But what we have to understand, especially when it comes to football, man, and I think it's sometimes it gets passed, it gets transmitted in different ways. You got to have a guy who just won't let you lose.
Mm.
Burrow shows that, right? But can he do it on this level? That adversity, like playing with Ben Roethlisberger, there was times when I was in a huddle where the defense was, you know, busting their ass, trying to keep us in the games. Receivers couldn't get open or we weren't protecting. There was times when I could look at Ben and he goes, we're not losing this game. Like, even I know that the fires, you know, the stadium's on fire. We look like we're playing like dog shit. We're not losing that game. You see it with Russell Wilson, who I love playing. Russell Wilson won't let you lose games, and he has a coach in Pete Carroll to kind of come in and keep that mindset steady. Joe Burrow is going to have to prove to these guys, does he have the cape? You know, can, because one thing Aaron Rodgers can do, he can put on a cape and just win a game for you just by being mobile, big time throws, being resilient, just kind of had that dogmatic approach. Joe Burrow's did that in college, but he did it with an awesome team. Can he do it with the Cincinnati Bengals, who's not as talented, who doesn't have all the bells and whistles like LSU had? Can he do it? And so that's the challenge for him. And the city's going to adore him. Everybody's going to be waiting for him. But the AFC North is tough, man. It's a tough division. It's a hard-nosed division. And they pride themselves on defense, and they're going to be hunting for them.
Now, a team that didn't make any picks in the first round, but I'm terrified of what they're going to do because, like, you know, I'm a Jets fan. I'm an AFC East fan. It's these New England Patriots. They traded out of the first round. Yeah. There's a lot of free agent quarterbacks out there. Jalen Hurts is still lurking out there. Like, they got to go quarterback at some point and replace Tom Brady or at least fill in that gap. Where do you think Belichick and company go when it comes to the New England Patriots to call it under center?
You know, I think people want to say quarterback, but I don't. I think one of the things that hurt Tom Brady last year was that they didn't have a receiver. And I mean, you know, they had Antonio Brown. That was nothing. Edelman's getting older. At one point they had, you know, Josh Gordon. That was a project that just didn't work out. So they got to find themselves a staple one or two, a guy that's going to be a blue-collar, hardworking guy, the Patriot way, who's going to believe in that and embody that. Belichick's going to find him. I wouldn't be surprised if he goes outside linebacker or wide receiver here. I don't think quarterback is really in his vision. I think he feels like he has a guy or he can go get a guy that can kind of carry it. But I think defense or receiver is something he's looking at. And you got to understand, Belichick is a defensive-minded coach. If they can't score, they can't win. And so I think he's going to find that kind of diamond in the rough on the defensive side of the ball, or a receiver who's just flat out pissed off because he wasn't considered in the same conversations as Jerry Jeudy, CeeDee Lamb, and Justin Jefferson or Ruggs. And he's going to say, you know what? Like, just put me in, coach. I'm going to go to work. And yeah. Belichick's going to make him a dog, and, you know, he's going to be a superstar.
Somebody's got to throw him the ball, and if it's not somebody who draft, who do you get? Do you think he has that quarterback already on his roster? Where do you think he goes for his new signal caller?
I don't know. I forgot the young man's name that's was backing up Brady.
That's all I'm saying.
I'm losing his name in my head. But for me, I don't think it's so much the quarterback. One thing about Belichick, I think people don't give him enough credit. He doesn't write the script according to the way we think or the average person thinks. I think he's always a genius. He's always turning. He's always switching. He's always adjusting. He's always preaching. He's always teaching. And so for me, I think he understands that a big part of what he was able to do in his glory years was have a defense to back Tom Brady up. And Tom Brady just being the alpha male and the super competitive and a quarterback kind of matched all that. And obviously you win Super Bowls. But he, you know, I watched the other day. It was Brady versus Manning, November 7th, 2005, in Foxborough. The Colts end up winning that game. Peyton is actually tearing it up, but Brady was tearing it up. I think Peyton actually had a pick in that game. But I was going back. I was looking at that defense, man. There's a lot of guys who I played against when I used to play against the Patriots. You talking about Roosevelt Coleman. You talk about Willie McGinnis, Teddy Bruschi, Rodney Harrison.
All world defense.
I mean, just like battle axe dudes. You know what I mean? Yeah. Just like put them in it. If you wanted to fight in the parking lot, these dudes were scrap. You know what I mean? That's who I can see Belichick getting those type of guys. Just because if you have a defense that keep you in the game, it doesn't matter the type of quarterback you really have, as long as he doesn't turn over the ball and he just does his job accordingly. And so for me, I just see Belichick going defense and or maybe receiver, but that's where I see him leaning towards.
All right, so second round is tonight. Tell me some of the guys that were left out of that first Thursday night, first round of the NFL draft that you got your eyes on that you think can make some noise next year, really contribute to a team.
So for my Pittsburgh Steelers, I think they're picking 40th. I'm not sure that they're in the second round, man. There's a tackle out of Houston by the name of Josh Jones. I was in, like I said, I was at Senior Bowl. I watched him. The kid is a scrapper. He showed up. I think he had an okay first day. But the next 2 days, man, he went to war, man. And what I like to see, especially when you evaluate talent, man, you like to see guys raise their game to the level of competition. And he did that. And so I really like – hopefully, you know, with the Steelers, man, you talk about an interior three that aged. They played a lot of football between Marquise Pouncey, DeCastro, and Ramon Foster. Now, Ramon Foster is retired, and now you have Pouncey and DeCastro. But both of those, Castro and Pouncey, are in their 30s, man. And at some point, you got to make sure that, you know, we talked about being a hard-nosed division in the AFC North. You need interior linemen to get the job done, because with a bad defensive line, a badass defensive line, you need a good-ass offensive line.
Hell yeah.
Knuckle up with them. And the Steelers have always traditionally had that. So I can see them going offensive lineman in the second round. Or maybe receiver, or maybe running back. But if I'm the Steelers, if you got Josh Jones out of Houston, I really like him. I think you got an opportunity to grab that young man because he can play tackle guard for you. You go for it. You know, I think Swift is still out. Is Swift out there, or did Swift get picked up from
Jones? I think he's still out there. I don't think he was picked there.
Dobbins is out there. You still got – I think you got what's the running back for Clemson? TN.
I think he was picked up by the Chiefs.
He didn't get picked up by the Chiefs. That's
Clyde Edwards. My fault. I think he's still out there. You're right.
Right. So you know, there's still a couple big time names that are kind of floating around. I think when you get into I was a fourth round of 131. I got drafted. Mm-hmm. And what I realized, a lot of guys who get drafted between 3 and 6, man. You know, those are the guys who are going to get you through the cold weather months. You know, those are the guys where, you know, when it's December and everybody's broken up, those are the guys who are taping their wrists, smoking a cigarette on the bench. those are the type of guys going to, you know, New York bruisers. So those are the guys who I always like to see come out on top, because nobody talks about them. Nobody's talking about them. Nobody's looking for them. But somehow, you know, year.
That's what franchises are built at, though, man. Right. Like the splashy first rounders are great, but I mean the good franchises, the good teams, they make their money between the third round and the sixth round. That's right. Where they kill every single year.
And those are the guys, you know, year 13. You know they're still out there strapping it up. You know, man, this guy came from Okie Podokie State. Because nobody ever cared about him, so he's not used to nobody calling for him. He's all he cares about is how is he putting the butter on the bread and how and where he's putting his shoes at night. You know, it's a different mentality. So I always respect those guys, and I always kind of around the draft time, I peek around and see what small school guys pop up and land somewhere.
Awesome, awesome. Well, Willie, I know you got a lot to do, and you know, the draft is about to start again in a few hours. But thank you so much for coming through. It's always good talking with you, chatting with you. I hope you're staying safe out there, and let's do this again. Hopefully, not in social distancing. Man.
We got to get you on. We got to get you on my podcast, man. The Two Bigs podcast with me and Brandon Newman, talking all thing, everything. Mostly coaching, not so much sports, but we get into it. So you're the man of the people, man. I would love to have you.
Man, it would be an honor and a pleasure, my friend. Let's do it soon, man. Stay safe.
Thank you, baby. Appreciate it.
You too, bro. And that was Say Less with Kaz. Thank you to my guest, Willie Colon, for coming through. You can check out Barstool Breakfast on Sirius XM each and every morning on your channels over there. And please subscribe, youtube.com/Kazeem. Subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, Podbean, anywhere you listen to podcasts. Thank you so much for listening. Every Monday through Friday, we're giving you content. We're giving you interviews. We're giving you just amazing conversations from amazing people. And I really, 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 really hope you're enjoying it. So thanks to all of you for subscribing. And we will see you tomorrow. Say less.